Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our second guest today is Colin Flaherty. He is an award-winning journalist and the author of Don't Make the Black Kids Angry, The Hoax of Black Victimization and Those Who Enable It. That came out in 2015. He also wrote White Girl Bleed a Lot, The Return of Racial Violence to America and How the Media Ignore It. That came out in 2013. And he also wrote Knockout Game, A Lie. And his website is Colin Flaherty. And you want to visit that website, and I post it in the chat room. Subscribe so that you could get message from Colin. Anyway, Colin, welcome to the program. He isn't. Oh, well, shoot. He's on Twitter. Or he's on Skype. Because he messaged me. So, I'm not sure where he's at. Anyway. Let's see. Let me see if I can... Colin, okay. Okay. Alrighty, I'll just type him. We are trying to connect you, buddy. I don't know what to say, because we were talking just before. Okay. Anyway, he is on Twitter, and this morning I was listening to something he was talking about, Gettysburg, on July the 4th, and as I mentioned, okay, he said that they're waiting. He's waiting. So I don't know. He just sent me a message that he's waiting. So I don't know what he's waiting for. Let's see. Yeah. Yeah, let's see if I can. There he is. Okay, Colin, are you there? Colin, are you there? Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Colin. Done. Colin, are you there? No. Well, damn it. Excuse my language, but I don't know. He says make sure they're using this account. Okay. I've given you let's see, view profile. I gave you the right account, correct? Well, doggone it. Oh no, 5351. Okay, okay, dialed the wrong one. Okay, he's typing me back. He doesn't. Okay, I don't know. Gee. Okay, do we have him yet? No? Okay, he's got to accept the invitation. Colin, you got to accept the invitation. Okay. I send everybody an email telling them exactly what to do. Oh, I see. Bennett. Okay. Oh, okay. So is he? Okay. All righty. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Colin.
Oh, we have everybody together now.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Okay, I've already announced you and given them your book titles, and then I was going to tell them about Gettysburg. But first, tell us what you.
Just lost you. I got him. But no, I got you. I don't have her.
Oh, no.
Gremlin.
We are just having our technical difficulties today. Sorry about that. All righty. I told them about what you did recently, or you're going to tell them about what you did recently, and then I want you to talk about Gettysburg on July 4th. And I've already told them about your books and how wonderful you are, and that they should follow you on Twitter. Absolutely. Follow him on Twitter and follow me also. Okay. Colin, what have you done recently that has caused such commotion? And people are saying, oh, you shouldn't have done that. And so tell us what you did.
So I kept getting all these emails from people saying, Colin, you got to do something. We got to do something. So one of my friends in the famous Brex Mill and Exile group said, let's shut down a freeway. I said, that sounds like a good idea. Let's just do it. So people may know, I document black crime and violence wildly out of proportion. I document how all these people are in denial, deceit, and delusion about it. So just a few weeks ago, members of Black Lives Matter were out on this freeway, stopping the freeway, walking around the stopped cars with baseball bats and glares. So I said, well, that's good for the goose, good for the gander. Let's us go do that. So we did it. We stopped the freeway with our signs. We did live Twitter stream, and we changed the world.
Ah, and so what happened as a result of what you did? And was it beneficial? Did it accomplish what you anticipated or what you wanted?
Yeah, I wanted to do two things. One, I wanted to draw attention to the greatest lie of our generation, the hoax of black victimization. And I don't know how we got here right now, and I don't know how we got here so quickly, but you just can't go anywhere, TV, radio, newspapers, your school, to your deli, to your movie channel, without getting emails or hearing the story about black victimization and white racism. So when I document, it's the opposite. And so that was the first thing I wanted to demonstrate. And we got a lot of good attention for that. I mean, my live stream on different platforms, it got over 100,000 views. But the second thing we wanted to really do was to let people around the country know this wasn't some mega organization funded by the Ford Foundation. This is just a bunch of guys smoking cigars going, man, we got to do something to save this country. And, you know, it's not going to be a magic bullet. It's not going to solve everything right away. But let's show people you can do something and to make a statement, whether you're in Wilmington, Delaware, whether you're in Texas or California, you can do something. And a lot of people who are more able to do things, I call them the old dudes. The old dudes may end up saving this entire enterprise because we are the ones who cannot be threatened, harassed, intimidated, or fired since we're already kind of past that phase in our lives.
So, yeah, you're right. You can't be fired from a job that you don't have if you're just, as you say, you're retired and now you're just attempting to have a voice. Now, do you think that you're angry about about racial bias, or do you think that you're overstating it, or do you think that there's really, well, your books are very good. We've had you on the program before. We've talked about this. We've talked about the people in prisons and how they react. And so it's not something that has just happened in the last 6 months.
No, I've been documenting this for a while, and it's been happening for longer than that. The Department, I hate to throw numbers out. Let me just throw one out. Victim survey, Department of Justice, 590,000 examples of interracial violence last year. 93% was black on white. These are crazy numbers. It's wildly out of proportion. So what I do when I talk and when I write about it, and you do videos and podcasts, I document it very carefully. But at some point, you know, the need for documentation is done. Ask a cop. Ask somebody that went to a school, a black school. Ask a teacher. Ask a cab driver. Ask a bus driver and see if they'll tell you what it's really like out there. There's an enormous amount of black hostility towards white people. White people simply do not want to acknowledge this or even think about this. We're so busy worrying about that one little tiny spark of racism that might be inside of us. And if we see it or feel it, we dial 911 so we can get the fire hose out there and put it out. But black people, we call them fellas, the fellas on mainstream media, the radio, all over the place, they're not looking around from side to side. They're not measuring their words. They're not guarding their words. They're coming out and saying it very plainly. White people are really, really bad people, and they're always messing with black people, when that is not really even close to being true.
And it seems that only white people can be racist. And yet, aren't they being racist by pointing out how awful we are?
You know, I heard Gayle King say that the other day, the big CBS, I mean, this is CBS News now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Gayle King, she was on her morning show, and she introduced a guest who was about to tell everybody how awful white people are. And Gayle King reminded her audience, most people say black people can't be racist. And so we have, you know, every phase of our lives when it comes to race, everything's upside down. Everything's topsy-turvy. And so we're just sitting here trying to set it right and reminding people of all the damage that has been done, all the lives that have been lost because it is so topsy-turvy.
Now, do you think that this has occurred? Could you put a time frame on it of when this started happening? Was it, I don't know, 1950, 1960? When did all of this racism become such an issue? And why do you think that it became an issue?
Well, I remember when I first started documenting this stuff, I didn't know about it any more than anybody else. And then people started saying, hey, Colin, it's Obama, Obama did it. And I kind of said, listen, I didn't see him out there throwing rocks. But then you look at what he did, and from minute one, when they took office, every single member of his administration, that's the 12,000 people that he got to hire when he was the president, everybody started looking at the world through the lens of race. Not just the Department of Justice, who were telling us that black people are relentless victims. Department of Education, enormous disparity between white kids and black kids in performance and discipline. That's all about racism. And every time we come across this disparity of any kind, it's always about white racism. It's never about black dysfunction. So you go through every department of the federal government, and it's still in there. I mean, the EPA, we learn about environmental racism. At the military academies, they teach white privilege.
Yikes.
So top to bottom, there's something screwy going on in this country. I don't think it's sustainable, but what do I know? I'm not Karnak the magician. I'm just a guy sitting here telling you what I see right in front of my face.
Right. And I do understand that years ago that black families were very close. The father was in the home, and then all of a sudden they became ghettoized, and then all of a sudden there were drugs brought into the area where they were living. It seemed like there was kind of a plan to destroy the black family.
Well, here's the thing, Deanna. That may or may not be true. I don't know. But here's what I do know. I do know that a lot of people are just really, really eager to the point of desperation of trying to help black people shed the responsibility for their own behavior.
It's
always something. And my attitude is like, hey, if you clunk somebody over the head, that's on you. That's not on anybody or anything else. We're not going to talk about families or cradle to prison pipelines or health, education, whatever. No, we in this civilized society, we do not expect you to go around clunking people on the head, robbing them, killing them, raping them at a rate 5 times, 10 times, 1,000 times greater than white people, and 10 times that greater than Asian people. So, you know, I find everybody is kind of loath to do that.
Well, I think that everybody should be accountable for their behavior. As I mentioned in the first hour, no matter what color you are, black, brown, white, you need to be accountable for your behavior. If you commit a crime, you should do the time or make some sort of restitution and be accountable, and not be get out of jail free card simply because of the color of your skin, whether you're white, black, or brown. I don't know. Is that so wrong to expect accountability from everybody? That one race should not be able to do crime. Well, for instance, this current situation, which is a totally different situation than we've ever experienced before because of the COVID-19 situation, where people have been let out of jail, and there's all the looting and all the violence. That is unacceptable no matter what is going on. That is unacceptable behavior.
And it's amazing how that simple truth that you just said, simple, transparent, plain, powerful, you say that on a mainstream TV, you say that on a mainstream news outlet, you will be removed from the public square and branded as a bad person and tarred and feathered and run out of town. So that's what we're up against. So that's why the people that follow my stuff, you know, we're doubling down. We're getting more determined. We're looking for ways to bring more attention to this, because this is just about as awful as you can imagine it.
It is. It is really terrible. And, people are afraid in any neighborhood because the neighborhoods. And okay, we're going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
With you and me, we all can be heroes if we take the lead.
All righty, we are back, and our guest is Colin Flaherty, and his website is colinflaherty.com. www.colinflaherty.com. I'll post that in the chat room. And if you subscribe to that website, you will get messages from him. And also, I would encourage you to join him on Twitter. Join me on Twitter so that you can see what's going on. And somebody mentioned that Parler was much more lenient, but Parler is just about as they censor things too, just like Twitter. Anyway, Thomas Sowell said this about your book. Reading Colin Flaherty's book made painfully clear to me that the magnitude of this problem is greater than I had discovered from my own research. He documents both the race riots and the media and political evasions in dozens of cities, unquote. Okay. It is a problem, and you've covered it, and you're not a racist because you've covered it. You've covered it because it's happened.
Well observed. You know, having Thomas Sowell say that about you is like being at a PGA golf tournament, and Tiger Woods walks by, and he sees you in the gallery, and he goes, "Hey, that guy's a better golfer than I am." It's pretty amazing, to tell you the truth.
Exactly. And he's right. He's right. And he has the courage to say it and did say it. And it is documented. And you're not a racist because you've documented what's going on. Although some people would say, oh, Colin's a racist. He's just trying to stir up trouble.
Listen, we don't repeat, you know, we don't do the enemies of truth, we do not do their dirty work for them by repeating their false accusation.
Right.
What we do is expose them for their denial, deceit, and delusion. So let me ask you a question, Deanna. I just have an image of people all over the country, just in their backyards. They're doing a barbecue, drinking a beer, smoking a cigar, 5 or 10, 15 people there. They're talking about the news. They look around at each other, and, you know, a year or two, they were good guys. They were people doing the right thing, paying their taxes, going to church, keeping their lawn cut, painting their white fence white. Now they look around and they go, hey, everybody now says we're the bad guys. No, I just don't think people are buying that. I just don't. So I don't know how it's going to turn out, but I just know a lot of people are just not going to sit there and go, hey, I'm a good guy. I'm not one of the bad guys.
Right. And of course, the media does not portray reality as it is. They are they're obviously very biased.
Well, here's the thing. You and I are the media now. People with a Twitter account are the media. It's like, I think so. I heard this before. I heard some people talk about how they were disappointed that the New York Times and 60 Minutes and CBS News wasn't at our protest rally where we shut down Interstate 95. But, you know, here's the thing, though. It's like, why are we depending on the enemies of truth to validate us? These are the people that caused the problem. And when we come and expose the problem, everybody's waiting around for them to say, oh, yeah, Colin, yeah, we've been doing this for 50 years. Now that you pointed out, we'll stop now. No, they're totally invested in the whole thing.
Of course.
So let's not wait around for somebody called the media to give us a blessing so we can pat each other on the back. I mean, we had hundreds of thousands of people experience that rally and protest we had this week. Not one of them came from CBS News or CNN or MSNBC.
Right. Well, 15 billionaires own the media, and it's been that
Diana,
way.
Hold on. You see, I just said we're the media, and you like blew that off, and you go back to something that may or may not have been true back in the old days.
You and I.
We're the media.
But what I am saying is that the media is very biased. They're never going to acknowledge that what is going on isn't what they're never going to acknowledge it. They're never going to acknowledge the truth.
That's why we shouldn't wait for it. We shouldn't expect it. We shouldn't wonder where they are. No, we are taking, they are the problem. We're taking them down too. Half of everything I do, I document black violence out of proportion. But I also document how the reporters just get it wrong all the time.
Deliberately.
Well, here's the thing. I don't read their minds.
Right.
I just say they got it wrong. the show, they got it wrong. So, like I said, I don't do the Karnak the Magnificent routine by reading people's minds. But here's what we do know. At some point, the pattern becomes the proof. You know, last year at the Kavanaugh hearing, Senator, there's a guy named, I never heard of him before. Have you ever heard of Senator Whitehouse?
No.
Yeah, he's a real senator from Rhode Island. Prosecutor, former prosecutor, a Democrat. So during the Kavanaugh hearings, he's there lecturing everybody about when he was a prosecutor, pattern is proof of bias that is used in courts all the time. So we don't have to have access to their emails. We don't have to have them hooked up to a mind reading machine. We look at their patterns and we go, yeah, you guys are always reporting this a certain way. When you make an error, you always err on the wrong side. That's how.
Exactly. All righty, we'll be back in 3 minutes. And our guest is Colin Flaherty. And let me just share a comment from the chat room. Black Lives Matters is a racist group of narcissists hell-bent on causing racial division. They want to use blacks as cannon fodder. What are your thoughts?
I don't know who that was, but they pretty much figured it out. But again, you know, let's not get too deep into the people are using black people to do this or that.
Right.
That may or may not be happening. But when somebody picks up a Molotov cocktail and we see on live television destroying blocks and blocks and blocks of these funky new businesses in downtown Philly, let's not blame that on some puppet masters. Let's blame the people who we see doing it. And that's why I don't know why so many people are so loath to do that.
Exactly. Why aren't they held accountable for what they're doing?
Nobody knows the answer. Well, nobody knows the answer to that. But here's what the danger is. So if we sit there and let that stop us from, seeing this and observing it, just because we don't necessarily know every detail, what's motivating these psychos that are out there doing this hyperviolence, well, we don't want that to happen. Just keep observing and keep speaking the truth about it. And I say in my own life, leave off the causes, leave off the solutions, leave off the conspiracies. Just keep asking people, did you see that? Did you see this? Hey, there was something really, really powerful that happened last week. And Tucker Carlson got a hold of it, too. Did you see his show on Friday night by any chance?
No, but I did listen to your spiel about it this morning. On Twitter.
Oh, okay. So
yes.
Okay, so I'll just do the 20-second version of it. So there's you see this in Frederick, Virginia. There's a white mom and her daughter in the car. They're surrounded by a bunch of black people. They're pounding on the car. You could see him threatening and yelling at her through the window, trying to open the door, trying to break the window. She's on the phone to 911. We hear the 911 call, saying, "Hey, this is happening. That's happening. Help." The 911 operator says, "No, we can't send help. That's a city-sanctioned event." Now, Deanna, I would not expect anybody to believe me when I tell you that unless it was actually on video, on audio, but it is. And the great thing is, so the lady backed up. They were hanging on her car, then drove away. And when she drove away, somebody jumped in front of her car, and he was basically brushed away. Day or two later, NPR does a big story about how white supremacists are now weaponizing automobiles. These people are like parodies of themselves now.
Isn't that amazing? Just absolutely amazing. She must have been terrified, absolutely terrified. Anyway, so tell us about what you're thinking about Gettysburg. Did you want to talk about that?
Yeah. There was a... You know, when we did this thing out on Interstate 95, we had to keep it close to the vest because we didn't want the cops stopping us. And And so a lot of people, you know, they said, Colin, I would have been there if I'd have known what you guys were going to do. But we didn't, you know, we thought if the word got out, the cops would stop us. Too easy for that to happen. Anyway, Gettysburg is different. A couple of days ago, some fellas and members of Antifa said they were going to go to the Gettysburg National Memorial Cemetery on July the 4th and burn American flags. And so my gang, the same gang that said, hey, Colin, let's go shut down the freeway last night. They said, hey, Colin, I got to stay away from these guys. They're giving me too much to do. Last night they said, let's go to Gettysburg and let's, even if nobody else is there, we will protect those flags and those monuments. Now, have you ever been to Gettysburg?
You know, I have. And it was the most interesting place. And I felt really the spirits there. It was interesting. It was really interesting. And I have been there, yes.
Well, the thing about Gettysburg is I've got a lot of relatives there.
Yeah.
And it's that's like the middle of redneck country.
So yes.
The idea that a bunch of fellas and members of Antifa are going to go in there and desecrate the flag or these memorials, I don't see that happening personally. But my gang wants to go up there anyway. So if anybody wants to join us, I'll be talking about it on email and on my podcast. So you can just sign up for my email at colin@colinflaherty.com. But I think a lot of people are going to be there going, no, this is not New York City. We're not Mayor Bill de Blasio. We are going to protect our heritage right here, right now, from you. Because you don't scare us.
Right. It's a different part of the country. Absolutely. You're right. It's a beautiful part of the country.
I tell you, that Gettysburg story, it's a great story, too.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody ever saw the movie Gettysburg, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the guy Joshua Chamberlain, a professor of classics in Maine, college in Maine, they said, you're now an officer. You're in charge of the end of our line. You have to stay. You can't retreat. If you lose this part of the line, the Rebs, the Confederate Army is going to swarm us from the back. They're going to flank us, and the battle's over. We lose. At that point, there's nobody between Gettysburg and Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Jefferson Davis had a letter ready to place on Abraham Lincoln's desk dictating the terms of Lincoln's surrender. And, you know, the stakes were high. So there's Joshua Chamberlain on top of this hill, this college professor. The guys are coming up the hill. They're trying to take the hill. He runs out of ammunition. Now, if that were you, what would you have done?
I don't know, because I have a different view of the so-called Civil War. There were only two battles fought in the North. One was at Gettysburg, and the other one was at Antietam.
All right. Let's stick to the story. Let's not go wandering off down to some historical black hole here. Harry, what would you have done? You know what he did?
You know, I don't know.
He charged down the hill. No bullets in their guns. The Confederates didn't know that. They threw their guns down and ran. They were taking prisoners, pointing guns at people with no bullets in them. That saved the entire war. One guy, some ridiculous act of valor, and that's what we remember at Gettysburg. And that's what, you know, that's why a lot of people really feel connected to that place.
Well, yeah, I feel there's a lot of dead bodies there, a lot of spirits there. I could feel the spirits there. We do have some callers. Let's take a quick call from Tom in Florida. Tom?
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. First off, I want to ask you guys this. Let's talk about a few things of the Civil War, but I want to get to the main point. How come Donald Trump and the President of the United States is not going to get George Soros out of New York and arrest him for this murdering rampage? Why isn't George Soros' property being right now the FBI, the military, going in and compounding and confiscating George Soros' property in New York City, wherever hell he lives, and get him behind bars immediately?
Okay.
This whole thing with the Black Lives Matter, I call them the Black Looters Matter, the Bolshevik Lying Matters, Bolshevik Lying Matters. What's going on here is the destruction of the white culture in this country. We gave every group of people that ever came here, the Northern Europeans gave everything. We gave them airplanes. We gave them diesel engines. We gave them motors. We gave them electricity, light bulbs.
Okay. Let's let Colin respond to your call, to your question.
That's a little bit above my pay grade. If I see George Soros throwing rocks and breaks and bottles out there, then I'll arrest them. I'll leave the rest of that to smarter people than me.
Okay. I understand your concern, Tom. So thank you very much for calling. Good points. Barbara Ann in Missouri. Barbara?
Hi. I wrote a book. I finished it. It's banned. It's censored. I paid $3,300 for it. And it's I'm Fearlessly White, Not a Slave, 1,000 Years Together. Alexander Solzhenitsyn wrote his book. And he writes about 200 years in the Jews. I write about 1,000 years in the Jews, plus in South Chicago. Okay. Anyways, there's going to be a Eurofest. And if you want to contact Eli, E-L-I, Joseph James, 2012 at AT&T.net for more information. But what I want to bring out is, I'm so glad, Colin, I could cry that you're defending and you're resisting. Because I'll tell you something. I grew up in South Chicago, like where you're from, Deanna. And Mama said she was like a prophetess. She was like in the 50s, after World War II, she saw the difference in our country. And she sat me down like oral talking, you know, plus the 12 kids, plus working full time as slaves to Jews and everything. Plus she'd go to the politicians and the government officials. What's happening to Chicago? And she said the Jewish real estate agent blockbusters are going to bring in block by block. You're never going to know what's going to happen. The most violent of the blacks and Mexicans. And this is what happened. It's now 28% white. That's the eighth wonder of the world, that city, with our museums, our trillions of dollars of art and the aquarium, the lake, Navy Pier, the lakefront. It's the center of business. The Chinese are coming in right now. Well, what happened after the Civil Rights Act was it was drafted by a rabbi in a synagogue. And this is just a small list from my book, just a small list. They beat up my mother of 12 with pennies in her purse because the Jews didn't pay us anything, you know what I mean? And robbed her. They beat up my father on the way to work for Jews at a book publishing company. They beat and crippled my brother, who was going to, become a priest, so he was going to become a social worker with a master's degree. He was earning his way for college at U.S. Steel. The black guy, kicked him in the groin so bad, and plus beat him up when my brother ran away to the bus because it was all black and brown neighborhood by the 60s, you know what I mean? That he's disabled for life from the 60s until now. A vegetable.
Okay. Do you have a question for Colin?
Well, all right. How do you think, all right, knowing this, Colin, right, knowing this Polish-American situation, how can we say, hey, look at what happened. This is going to happen to every city. We always have to address our audience and our people. We want to apply. How is this going, knowing this knowledge, we can't take this lightly, what they're doing. Okay, so what do you think, Colin and Deanna? What do you think?
I'm still trying to make the connection between all the violence you suffered at the hands of black people. Somehow
blacks
we're letting them
brown,
off the hook. Somehow we're letting them off the hook and blaming Jewish people for that.
Well, here there's a rap song, and there's like 15 different examples, and the blacks sing in their rap songs, "We can get away with anything. We got good Jewish lawyers." It's on the internet. It's all over the place. Yeah, they
Look,
know
Jews
it.
Are
not
Jewish,
only that,
Jewish.
Colin.
All right. Listen, stop.
Barb, go
I
ahead.
I can't listen to this idiotic rant anymore about Jews. Listen, Jewish people are victims of black violence, probably more than non-Jewish people are. And to sit here and somehow blame them for being the puppet masters, I don't give a damn about your mysterious puppet masters. I care about what's happening in front of our faces, that everybody's always trying to, like, you know, shed the blame for who we see doing it. That's what you did. I don't play that game. That's a dangerous game that gets people hurt.
Okay. All righty. Thank you, Barbara, for your phone call. Okay. Sebastian in Sweden.
Hello, hello, Diana.
Yes, go ahead. Quickly.
Yeah, I was just came in, so I didn't hear the your interviews before, but I just want to tell you something about the coronavirus in Sweden. It's gone out of hand because this herd immunity is just, you know.
Yeah, we're actually talking about some other issues rather than the coronavirus. We're talking about mob violence and the black on white crime. And
Diana, let's talk about the coronavirus for a minute as it relates to what we're talking about.
Okay.
So when the coronavirus came out, hold on 1 second. Sorry, Diana.
Yeah, that's
when the coronavirus came out, there was a story that was picked up by a lot of black publications that said black people are immune from the coronavirus because we have superior immune systems. This is like right out of the Reverend Farrakhan. This is the kind of stuff he was saying. Then the next phase was, okay, well, maybe that's true, maybe that's not true. A lot of people still believe that, by the way. Next phase is, okay, we got to start wearing masks. All of a sudden, black people came out and said, no, we can't wear masks. Because if we wear masks, white people are going to kill us because they're going to think we're trying to rob a bank. I know that sounds far-fetched. These are stories in major papers.
Well,
and in Oregon the other day, a town mandated the wearing of masks for everybody except black people for that exact reason.
Wow.
And so, you know, listen, listen, be quiet, Sweden. Here's what we know is that we just over and over and over in every aspect of our lives, we see the fellas and lovely ladies. They're just not really attached to this country, to us. They're just not. I don't know what they're attached to, but they're just not part of what we're doing here.
Okay. All righty. We do need to move on because we're running out of time. So tell us about Gettysburg.
Yeah. So anyway, so we're gonna take a look at the situation this week. I've got a big email list, big platform. If my gang and I decide that, you know, there's something missing from the defense of our monuments, we'll head up there. We'll do a big caravan. We'll meet somewhere, and we'll have a lot of fun doing it. And just like we did on Interstate 95, we will change the world. So stay tuned.
Do you think that it was effective, what happened a couple weeks ago?
Over 200,000 people heard about, A, what we were doing, why we were doing it, and how they could do the same thing. Is there some people look for magic bullets. Well, if we just put the enterprise zones down there, Colin, all this crime will go away tomorrow. And there's a million magic bullets, a million excuses. None of them work. What works is, you know, just taking care of your business one step at a time.
Okay, we will be right back in 3 minutes. Guest is Colin Flaherty, and anyway, July 4th seems like a very appropriate time to do something in a very appropriate place. Correct?
A great place. A lot of great places in this country that somehow, all of a sudden, aren't so great anymore. And we're supposed to just sit there and go, oh, okay, yeah, take them down. I mean, this is an abomination. I just don't think a lot of people in this country are going to sit for that much longer.
Right.
But here's the key. We can't wait for somebody else to give us permission. As Pat Buchanan would say, don't wait for orders from headquarters. Everybody out of the trenches now.
And that is true. Absolutely, it is true. And to see our country being ripped apart with looting and actually, when you destroy historical artifacts, you are destroying an entire culture. And that's what's going on.
Just like I was saying earlier, it's like they're not really attached to this country, to our heritage, to the things that make this country great, that have people in Africa. How many tens of millions of people would come here from Africa if they were able, if we allowed them? A lot. But apparently this country is an abomination for people of African descent. You know, one of those two groups of people is totally wrong.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Well, even the stuff that's going on in South Africa now is despicable, terrible. The whole world is in a turmoil.
Here's the lesson for us from South Africa. It's not that we should do something X, Y, or Z down there, but the world has turned its back on South Africa because everybody around the world looks at South Africa. They know what's happening to white people there, the ridiculous level of brutality, rape, and murder, robbery, land confiscation. The world knows that. They don't care. Because they look at South Africa and they say, those white people deserve it. When we come here, we see the same kind of violence here on a smaller scale. And we see mayors, police chiefs stepping aside, national leaders stepping aside, let it happen. Because on some level, they believe the rioters when they say, white people deserve this.
Wow. Wow. How did we get to this point?
You know what? Everything's worse than we think it is. Like, I don't think everybody's quite aware the tremendous extent of the black violence over the last 1 month. And cities big, hundreds and hundreds of cities, big and small. It's not just the stuff you see on the news. There's too much of it to make the news. But,
right.
You know, everybody's town, it's like, yeah, you know, this happened, that happened, this happened. There's a lot of violence going on out there, and a lot of people are pretending like it'll go away by itself if we just give black people more free stuff. You know, Hillary Clinton, during the last election, one of her favorite lines was, white people have to start listening to black people. First time I heard that, I got a little bit annoyed. Then when I thought about it, I said, she's right. Black people are screaming at us. They're not into us. We're not listening.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Colin. Our time is up. Take care.
Thank you, Deanna.
Bye-bye.